Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Hey guys, this is another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC here. We're back with another episode with Nat. He's a special correspondent and has lots to offer. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Tell the audience a little about yourself and where they can find you.
I'm a political consultant for various candidates in Virginia Republican politics, and I can be found on X Truth Social, Facebook, and Instagram.
And what's that handle for them to know what it is?
Well, on X, it's Wreck of Old 97. On True Social, it's Small Town Southern Man. On Facebook, it's Small Town Southern Man.
So, yeah. But yeah, we're going to dive into today's topic. We're going to examine different aspects of amplifying your voice, politics, and media. So we want to go into how you find your voice, and how media plays a role in politics to find your voice. The four categories for that is public speaking, which is the classic oral tradition of a speaker speaking to you and the audience hearing it. Then we're going to go to the power of the internet, which is the technological advancement that has been since the 90s and 80s that has greatly improved to mass mainstream audiences all around the world in a global stage. Then we're going to go to news coverage as we know it, which is basically current news and old news being talked about in a recent amount of time and it being in coverage and seeing it happen while it's also being streamed at that time or broadcasted. So it's different coverage with live. But let's go into public speaking. How does public speaking play a role in politics?
Public speaking is the oldest form of communication between politician and his constituents or would-be constituents if he's running for the first time. William McKinley used to hold his rallies on the front porch of his house in Ohio. This other candidate used to do it on the back of a train. I believe it's Harry Truman. He did rallies on back of a train in the 1948 presidential campaign. And more recently, this congressman from Missouri named Jerry Litton used to, every month, rent out a space in Kansas City and have a dialogue with his constituents, and it was put on every month on public TV.
True, and public speaking with the power of the internet has been a little weird. Talk us from the forms of your basement, too. But that's just a funny side note. But in recent events of public speaking, what is the main draw that public speaking has to give a candidate to give to the constituents or patrons?
Well, when a person sees a candidate face to face, and here's a word coming right out of his mouth rather than reading it secondhand from a newspaper or even seeing it on the news, it's a different thing. You're right there with the candidate at a rally or at a debate or at a forum, what have you, and it's just more personal that way.
True. And with that being said, does that mean the personal value that you take from public speaking can be given to a candidate of any kind?
Well, it depends on the candidate. Obviously, some of them are much better public speakers than others. Take, for example, the most recent presidential campaign. The gentleman who won was a far better public speaker than his opponent.
True. So, all right. So, you have a two candidate debate. How that Okay. But yeah.
Called partisan for one side or the other. The ones in the middle who have not yet made up their mind will decide based on the answers given at the debate or how a candidate presents him or herself. There's one example where presentation won the day in the debate, and that was the 1960 Kennedy-Nixon debate, when Nixon, people who heard that on the radio thought Nixon had won because he gave better answers, but those who saw it on the TV thought that Kennedy had won because Nixon was just getting over some type of illness and he still looked like 2 miles of bad road.
Interesting. So the persona and the presentation of how you are perceived in the different mediums can really affect how a person can win on that medium.
Yes, in that debate, unfortunately, he won on the answers, but he lost on the perception. He lost the debate, and I think that may have lost him the election, which turned out to be exceedingly close.
Interesting. All right. So with the settings going in, what are the three most basic things that a public speaker need to consider when even trying to do a public speaking event or public speaking in general?
One, I think you need to know the audience. You need to know what kind of people are out there. Not so you can tailor your message to try to be all things to all people, but to be able to expect excessive cheering or excessive booing. Another thing, you got to be able to size up your opponent. Is he or she in command of the facts? Could they possibly beat you in a debate? Number three, you got to examine how you look on camera versus how your opponent looks on camera, because you wouldn't want to do everything else right, go on stage, look like a slob, and lose a debate perceptively, and then go on to lose an election like Nixon did.
True. And the three main reasons why a purpose for public speaking to happen is typically pathos, ethos, and logos. And with logos, you talk about policy, you talk about facts. Pathos, you talk about emotion. So you want an emotional stance to an issue to draw a different attention to another audience to maybe draw them in to vote. And then the ethos is your credibility as a speaker and what you can speak on and how fluent you speak on it. So how does pathos, logos, and ethos play a huge role in public speaking?
Well, I've never heard of it broken down in those terms, but yeah, you do got to know what you're talking about in order to come off as credible to any kind of audience, whether it be live or TV.
True. And also, the purpose behind certain speeches can really drive the audience. Like, not every speech is going to be the same. So that's why knowing if it's like a State of the Union, then you need to speak on the facts. You want to speak on what you're going to do and potentially emotional side as well. You want to tie all three in that type of matter because it's a different type of speech. It's not just a logo speech. We just base state the facts. Now, sometimes you do state the facts, but that's usually like on the campaign, stating what you're going to run for, what policy you want. You know, being able to tell of the logistics of, say, how many people are coming in actually giving two taxes into the GDP. That matters to a point. But the main purpose why public speaking is accessible is the ethos. That's the main reason why people seek out a candidate. They want to identify with that candidate. They want to be able to reason with them, resonate, and get behind that. As a person running for that office, as an official, or any means of public servitude. Now, with public speaking, what is one aspect that you always need to consider that you haven't been said yet?
Well, you need to make a connection with the audience. And in order to do that, you have to be aware of who the audience is, where they come from, and basically what problems that they're having, so that you can identify with those problems and let them feel like you're one of them, so they will listen to you.
True. And, you know, we go back to how public speaking is so formal and, you know, old style approach, but like, it really does work to connect a large span of voter base, to connect to whatever person is getting that position. I think without it, there will be a loss of knowing who the candidate is, knowing how they stand on policy. There'll be a huge affected audience that's just disillusioned with what they know.
Well, I don't think public speaking is going anywhere anytime soon, even with all these technological advances we've made.
True. And that brings up our next category, which is the power of the internet. How have you think the power of the internet has changed public reception in politics and media?
Oh, by leaps and bounds. Used to be, back in the days of just the big three networks and a few powerful newspapers, it would take a long time for the perception of a candidate to gel in the minds of the public. But one podcast, one tweet or posting on social media, that could upend an entire election in theory.
True. And you know, there is different forms of the internet, but the biggest will have to be the social media aspect. Social media being, you know, the technological days of what? MeChat or something like that?
MeChat, that's a new one on me.
No, what was the first chat room back in the day? Like the first Facebook?
I first used AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah, true. But, you know, since, you know, the advent of Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and, well, YouTube, I would say YouTube is more of a social media. Is pretty much that we have different categories, different opinions, and just overall freedom of speech being expressed as what the internet represents.
Yeah, if the purveyors of the social media will let you speak freely, there at one time before Musk bought Twitter X and before Zuckerberg changed the rules on Facebook, it was only the liberals that had free speech.
True, and the naysayers having access to cancel culture was very prominent for years because of that. And the thing with that is that the cancel culture still exists, but it's not as rampant as it once was, when the transition of ownership of X actually went to Musk. So I would say that. And also, I feel like it wasn't just a free platform anymore to go to naysayers to post whatever they want. Now it's like there is no such platform that they can flock to and have an easy access to, and actually has prevented a lot more cancel culture from happening as much.
There is one. They created one called Blue Skies, and it's only the liberal naysayers, as you like to call them, who are doing that. But
it doesn't really have a main traction, though. Anyway, so that is one aspect of social media. Now, one thing about social media that is very powerful within the advent of the internet is the fact that now there is clips, there is video of the actual candidates in politics. So they would say you do a TV interview, right? Well, that TV interview can get a clip, it posts on social media, and now that clip can be circulating in all different aspects of that same conversation. You can have five different clips from one TV interview, right? You take the interview, you clip it all around. Now you get different views and different comments on that clip. And sometimes you even can share up the entire upload of the TV interview on like YouTube and like really be pivotal in your message if you can address it really good.
That's true, but some dishonest people, whether they be internet personalities or whether they be reporters, they take one clip of a larger interview, take those words out of context, and try to kind of make the candidate they don't like look like a fool, and it happens on Republicans and the Democrats.
Typically, that's confirmation bias. But that's any way you can do with that. But typically, the exchange of information in a short amount of time, making current events possible to react, and then also, you know, 2 weeks from now, I can still have the same impact, people can still see it, is the fact that the power of the internet allows people to view things at a later time. So if they missed it, they don't have to go to a source that's like a newspaper or trying to find an old TV clip. They can go on YouTube, go on different postings, and based on the search engine optimization, they can find what they're looking for pretty quickly. That's kind of the benefit of power.
I mean, everything has its benefits and its drawbacks, yeah.
Well, let's see. There's a particular aspect of the internet that you like with being accessible to freedom of speech.
I like the fact you can reach more people because you can't rely on the three networks to ask good questions or to report things accurately. Just like last campaign, Trump got on quite a number of fairly friendly podcasts, and it helped to change the perception of him, particularly among the younger people who get their news by that means as opposed to the traditional means.
And that's another thing. The same big platforms for podcasting is the same ones I mentioned: Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and then also podcast directories like Apple or Spotify being in that play as well. The reason why there's a new age of information gathering and information exchange is for the content on demand. So basically, when pod was a word, it was a print on demand tight status. But now it's kind of went into like video form, and now that they publish it on demand, now that's what podcast came from, because it was casting into the publication syndicate. And the thing is, a lot of the audiences is drawing to that, particularly for younger audiences to mid-age, because of the time that doesn't take to do it, and also the fact that they listen to their own means. So that's the huge advantage, is listening to a podcast at your own time. That's what the internet allows. And podcasts can even just be pause at 20 minutes and then go back to it and then listen to it again. Or in your case, a long car ride.
Yeah, that's true. I did listen to part of the Rogan Trump podcast riding from one campaign event to another with my colleague Bruce, and that was a fun way to spend the car ride. But I got to thinking that back then, that so many people who never watch the 6 o'clock news got a chance to see Trump unfiltered, and most of their perceptions were totally different from what the rest of the media told them to think.
And that's another distinction with the alternative media coming out with the rise of the internet, is the fact that the alternative media is challenging traditional media as a whole. And one aspect of that is pretty much, can the traditional meet the demand, what the new demands are?
I don't think they can. I think they are stuck in an old paradigm, much like the post office as it relates to Amazon. They're stuck in an old paradigm. They might try to modernize but it won't be enough. I think in the next 15 years, the big three networks plus CNN are probably going to be a thing of the past.
True.
They could be definitely going down a different route. That also brings exclusive content. There's now these platforms that have these huge followings have a lot of IP. But I don't know if IP would really be relevant in politics much, because that's a totally separate thing. Because most politics now is actually in podcasting, funny enough.
Yeah, I do believe podcasting will be the wave of the future, and some of these older politicians are going to have to get with that program. Otherwise, they could find themselves on the losing end of either a primary or a general election to a much younger, much more tech-savvy candidate.
True, and leveraging which platform to get on is probably the strongest tool that the internet can give because of the wide uses of media and format that it can give you. How can a candidate leverage an alternative media to best reach a new audience?
Well, to a candidate who is new to this, he ought to for his first podcast, pick one that is friendly to his point of view. That is, a conservative candidate should probably not seek out a liberal podcaster for the first time. He should wait till he gets good at podcasting before he parries and thrusts with the opposition.
True. All right. Is there anything of the power of the internet we have not discussed yet that you want to share?
I can't think of anything right now, but we can go back to it if you want to.
Yeah. I think one aspect of the internet is you have to know there's multiple people doing multiple things. So at any given time, you can see any type of content and any type of political views on that. So just remember, when you're cycling through it, maybe take it with a grain of salt and maybe have to do some research before believing everything you see. So, and with artificial intelligence coming in the mix, then you definitely need to worry about misinformation and things that can make you think a certain way that can be completely fabricated or taken out of context.
On artificial intelligence, I think we ought to just work on natural stupidity before we even start messing in that area.
True. I would say that would be ideal. But that's the power of the internet. And just be careful what you view, because sometimes it's not always what you think it is and what it means. So with that, we're going to move into news coverage as we know it. So, news coverage. There is two types of news coverage. Live feedback, and current events. Which one do you think is better in this new age of technology?
I'd probably say live, because you get to see things for good or bad happen as it does. For example, that plane crash that happened last night in Washington, D.C.
True. I think, live doing an audience for very current feedback when it just happened is probably the best to have the best conversation in that media field. Now, with that being said, what is a way for a person to access more live coverage that could give them more wide view of an issue?
Well, that's a trick. You never know when a news event is going to happen. I mean, person would have to get lucky. They'd have to through a number of disasters and or political events, some of which are one of the same.
True. So the access to information that news coverage gives us, what is one aspect that it's good for people to listen to?
Well, I think you need to pick somebody you can trust, a personality or a network that you can trust to consume the news.
All right. How do you weed out something like confirmational bias?
Well, you go with multiple sources. You trust, but you verify by not relying on one source. Me, I watch both Fox, I watch Newsmax, and occasionally I watch News Nation.
All right.
News Nation is supposed to be down the line, a very little bias, have people from both sides, and Fox does a little of that too.
And with the verification process on vetting out sources, what is one way to vet out a source to see if it passed a test for like biased or neutral coverage?
Well, you check out that personality social media post to get a better idea of where they truly come from.
All right. So we go back to social media as a vetting source for your news personalities, basically?
That's right. For example, let's say you're new to Bill O'Reilly. You want to know more about him. You check and see if he has a Twitter X, and you check out his tweets, and you see, does he come at this from a conservative perspective, a liberal perspective, or something in the middle?
True. Now, when you have news coverage, sometimes what we get into is what we call foreign policy. How does international coverage differ from domestic?
Well, in some cases, like in Britain, the news is even more polarized than the United States. Their newspapers over there, they're not shy about being the conservative paper of record or the liberal paper of record. And over here, New York Times pretends to be all the news it's fit to print.
Interesting. So, with a source portraying information, what is the better way to approach coverage in that source or that event?
Well, a lot would depend on an event. For example, the plane crash last night is really a nonpartisan event. I mean, Republicans and Democrats would both classify that as a tragedy, but something more politically tinged, like a street riot in some city, that it would depend on your point of view and whether you really want to get to the truth about it. If you do, you would go with multiple sources and just use your own judgment on that.
All right. So, with that being said, if we had news coverage, and a lot of times with news coverage, it doesn't always have to be live. It also can be current events. So these social media accounts that are out there covering current events of different topics, they are doing news, but they're doing current events. How does someone find current events better than maybe live coverage?
Well, I guess people who work long hours in the day, like at a factory or mill or something, they can't always catch the news live when it happens. They come home, they put on their news app and see what happened during the day while they were at the mill later.
True. And one such example of a current event would be like, let's say you have a reaction to an event in Indianapolis, but this event didn't reach Jacksonville, Florida until 6 hours after. But when they're covering it, there's always this buzz on social media about the event and people sharing what they thought happened. So one good thing that people can actually seek out in current events is pretty much sometimes finding Reddit can be a good source, depending on how, you know, people presenting the information. But another way to do it is pretty much just do feeds, having feeds to cycle through different content that you might want to see. And, you know, different feeds are based on what you search sometimes for. And you can also characterize your feed to say, for example, in Google News, there's still an option for what topics you want covered. So what you want it in your feed. So if you want politics, you can check off politics and then see what sources you can actually follow, individual sources, and then those sources will print updates over time.
Right. The one thing on Reddit, it sort of is biased to the left. That's not a really good example of someone who is looking for unbiased reporting to.
Okay, so Reddit is not necessarily unbiased. However, it's more free. So whatever format they give it to you is how they give it. But it's a lot of, Reddit has a lot of public discourse back and forth. So certain topics will be more charged than others. But typically it will give a branching point of both perspectives if both people are there.
So,
I mean, Reddit wanted to say that the front page of the internet. It's like, whatever. It is what it is. But that's one example that people use as an alternative news coverage type situation, other than feeds. But the thing, pretty much it really boils down to, what do you want in your feed? What do you want to read? Or what do you want to see? It's kind of how news coverage and current events can happen based on what is on your interest at that time.
I like how you can pick and choose the type of news you hear and from whom you hear. It's sort of like a cafeteria way of doing it. Used to be, when I was growing up, you had to wade through 25 minutes of what you didn't want to hear on the 6:30 news with Walter Cronkite to get to the story you did want to hear about.
True, and then they give like previews at the top where they're going to cover, and there's like many, many minutes later, and then sometimes it's not even as long as you thought it would be about.
That's exactly right. What I thought would be a great story sometimes turn out to be a nothing burger because they were so focused on all this other strange stuff.
And one thing I say about news coverage is updates is probably another own event style that people like. But updates is typically status, typically what's going on, who's coming out, that type of stuff. So yes, it's current events, but it's very specific current events.
That's right. Sort of like I got an update this morning on last night's plane crash that they now expected. Sadly, no survivors from that thing. And it's very brief, very truncated, but it doesn't give you a sense of what the story is about.
Yeah, you might have to go to different sources to see more about it. But yeah, that is pretty much live news coverage with either live style or current events or updates. The last category is actually live broadcasting. Live broadcasting is still in effect through live streaming, radio, and TV. And also, you know, how different things are proceeded. What is an example of live broadcasting that changed the entire perspective of one particular issue?
I'd say 9/11/01.
Why is that?
Well, because it started out normal NBC Today program. And as it unfolded, the cameras got to show the first plane hit. And then they talked, they speculated it was some type of unfortunate accident. And then they saw the second plane hit. And that changed the perception in one fell swoop.
True. That's one example. My example would actually be Vietnam. The public perception of Vietnam was greatly changed due to that being one of the first wars being live broadcasted to a mass audience. It changed the demographic, how they viewed the war, what they were fighting for, and what war truly was, why they didn't want to do it. Ever since that point, now it's easy to get coverage of live broadcasting to cover different topics like that. And can be very polarizing depending on how people want to switch their opinion quickly.
Nowadays, the reporters embed themselves in right there in the fight. And the first time I saw that was in 2003,
yeah,
when the Iraq War started.
And that kind of the news media being in war commissions, that kind of started in World War II. When they were live covering different battles through the telegraph. they would send it back, and within hours, the people had access to the information to actually what happened faster than anything else. So having a WordPress persona credential was kind of grown from that and just kept expanding in different avenues.
Well, the thing is that they've been live covering the war, like you say, since World War II. They're doing Vietnam.
Yeah, like live setting, not just like days or weeks. It's now like within a day, you have the coverage.
But what I was pointing out that in Iraq War, as a first-time reporters went right in with the military units and
yes,
and you know, interview, had access to them 24/7 for several days before they went back to New York or where it was to write the story.
True. And, you know, that's just like the power of TV. Now, when you go back to the power of radio, one particular thing that comes back to me is Fireside Chats by Roosevelt. Fireside Chats was very influential because he can speak on issues in a live setting. And it was a syndicated series every week. So people could tune at that specific time. So they knew that he was going to be on there talking about real life issues.
Well, I wasn't around for that, but grandma and grandpa told me all about that. They never missed it, even though they never voted for him.
True. So when you really think about live broadcasting, it actually gives... When you go on live and a signal being broadcasted out, typically, you have the current time in which it might happen. But you also just go live at any point and be on the radio, and just if people just randomly happen to be there on the same channel, then they can also hear it and they might stay tuned depending if they want to hear it.
I don't have that much experience with radio in that way, except when I was in my 20s, in my early 50s, I used to listen to this personality named Rush Limbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
It was on WRVA from 12 to 3. He was a conservative commentator, very entertaining fellow too. And he transformed talk radio into something that was very niche to a certain type of demographic and expanded it more to the masses from 88 to about till he died in 2020.
True. And another controversial figure that tried to do that as well was Alex Jones with InfoWars. But that's just him trying to be live coverage and not really the best candidate for it. But another thing with live broadcasting is live streaming. So because we have all these different ways to do live broadcasting, with live streaming, it's not really a hard signal going out. It's typically a live feed on a streaming platform. And anyone have access to that. And that has changed drastically with live feeds like YouTube and Facebook. What do you think about live feeds?
I think they can be useful. I haven't had much experience with them in my work. But I think if they're used right, it could make a candidate look well.
True. And typically with live feeds, a lot of different speeches would go to be on YouTube and other avenues to be on that live feed. With a live streaming setup. So you have a signal, you have a recording, and you're sending that signal out to what the platform you're using. It gives your average Joe the access to do a live stream if they don't have the radio broadcast equipment or the TV broadcast equipment. Because broadcasting equipment is a lot more involved than just a live stream. So live streaming is easy to set up. All you have to have is a reliable internet connection, a device to capture what you're trying to do, and put in the place in which you're recording from. And that's what's kind of giving a new definition to live broadcasting with live streaming. The reason why I'm putting live streaming and live broadcasting together is because it's based off the principle of live broadcasting.
Yeah, that's true. Without having to buy all this expensive equipment, most anybody can be a reporter just by having a phone and an internet connection to capture a speech that they want to make and give to the world. Like, say, in the days after the election, I noticed how a lot of people who were not at all keen with the result made these very entertaining rants. But did you ever notice how most of them did it from their cars?
Yes. Cars is a very popular place for live streaming. One is a neutral background. Second, it's a setting in which it's pretty quiet, not a lot going on. And third, it's secluded. You have a good access and you can mount your phone and then start the stream. That's kind of how that works. And with political means, people can talk on live, discuss what they think. People can do direct questions in live time, and then they can respond to those questions. And then it can change the course of the conversation to say maybe, let's say they're having a conversation about people they're fighting in the streets, all right? But what's, instead of them fighting in the streets, what if the conversation changes to, here's why they're fighting in the streets. There's not a lot of police here. The police either have been taken out of the situation, and that was maybe done by the mayor. So maybe the mayor didn't respond fast enough to the riot in the street, and the police just getting to that situation was delayed for a particular political figure.
Oh yeah, the power of a motorcade.
So sometimes real life issues can go back and go back and forth, and that's typically how live can be as a alternative avenue to different conversations at one time. So that's kind of what you could use live to go and just talk about different types of subjects if that is the topic you're talking at that point, or you want to stay on topic for that live stream. So it really just depends. The purpose in which you do it is versatile, and that's why it's also a good platform to potentially rival, you know, live content in a way that is what you want to do with it.
Yeah, you can do anything you want with it. Whether you have a lefties losing it type of rant in your car, or whether you take advantage of that medium to come up with ideas that might end the war in Ukraine or solve some other societal problem. It's like you say, it's all in what you do with it, and that very much depends on the individual given the live stream.
True, and you also have to know that what you say in a live video can be very, very sparking of other people reacting to you. So just know ahead of time that you might not always get all the people to agree with you in that live stream.
As polarized as society is, you're not going to get people to agree with you on what color the sky is.
And sometimes when you get in these weird ranting lives, people react to you because you're reacting negative, so they won't react back to you. So just keep that in mind while you're going to do that.
I know that. And an example of this is there was one of these lefties losing it ladies that I saw on Sky News Australia, and I couldn't resist posting some content making fun of them. So you gonna use that, make a fool of yourself. Beware, because they're going to be people who give as well as they get.
Yes. So, and sometimes certain people will watch the live, get mad, and then react to you, and then still react to you. So it really is something you need to watch. And it can really get out of hand. And also, if someone is live, don't dox them. So, respect that the nature is that they have right to privacy just like you do.
Doxing is illegal in many states, too.
So, don't go to the extreme and try to do something that could potentially put them in harm's way that doesn't need to happen. But, how you respond to a situation is up to the individual. but the personal lives should be, if they can't take what they're not saying, maybe they shouldn't be on live. But that's just a personal thing. With that, the fact that anyone is on live at any given time is pretty much how that's going to roll down and how that's going to affect the direct correspondence to the audience watching at that time. So that's how that works.
Yeah, responding to some of these idiots, I will say, can be a lot of fun.
On both sides are pretty interesting perspectives to keep in mind.
I do in such a way that it's not dodgy. I just use their own words against them by asking them certain questions, and that exasperates those fools more than a little bit.
Yeah. Definitely need to keep that in mind. So pretty much that is public speaking in a nutshell. The power of the internet, live broadcasting / live streaming in the news coverage and then current events. What is one closing argument you want to give that has not already been said?
Well, not much has been said about the big three media way it was when I was growing up. You basically just had ABC, NBC, CBS. They would have a local newscast from 6 to 6:30 and a national newscast from 6:30 to 7. And everybody believed what they heard on the news before the 2000s when they let their bias slip and show. And then as that happened, there was more of a demand for alternative media. Then came things like Fox News and Newsmax, and then before long you had podcasts, live streaming, and all this other stuff that gave everybody a voice. So pretty much anybody can be a reporter. Whereas when I was growing out, even when I started out in politics, you had three big figures on the major networks reading the news every night. But yeah, things have just leapt forward by leaps and bounds since I came of age.
And this is how you amplify your voice, politics, and media. Public speaking, you have the discourse that you can exchange. The power of the internet, your voice is heard and shared. The news coverage, whatever you listen to, what you follow, with how you influence what you heard. And then live streaming, whatever you see, how you interact with them is pretty much how your voice is heard that way. But this is the closing for Amplifying Voices, Politics, and Media. Thank you for being here. And where can they find you again in case they want to see you again?
On Twitter X, I'm Rec of Old 97. On Truth Social and Facebook, I'm Small Town Southern Man.
All right, guys. Well, that concludes this episode. Thanks for being here, Nat. And it was great having you again.
Nice to do it.
Bye, guys.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.